KSDP, 8:30 a.m. in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in Falls Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Accutan, Alaska.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. says he is doing everything he can to make sure there are no cuts to the Indian Health Service. Kennedy made the brief comment Wednesday as he was being ushered to his vehicle after a visit to a charter school in Gallup, New Mexico. National Native News asked Kennedy about elevating the Indian Health Service, a pledge he made during his confirmation hearing.
I've done everything that I can to make sure there's no cuts in Indian Health Service.
The agency in HHS provides service to about 2.8 million American Indians and Alaska Natives in 37 states. Kennedy's visit comes as leaders of tribes and Native organizations across the country are calling on the Trump administration to uphold treaty and trust responsibilities. Among things leaders are concerned about are funding and workforce reductions, and they're urging for tribal consultation. Kennedy's visit drew a group of demonstrators who were both President Donald Trump supporters and those protesting Trump administration actions. Demonstrators included Navajo Nation citizens. Kenneth Brown says he voted for Trump and was in support of Kennedy's visit.
He's here to help, even for the school, the kids. The kids are people too, so.
Brenda Hosky, who's the Democratic Party chair for McKinley County in New Mexico, was there in opposition of the visit.
I'm here in protest, you know, make sure that the trust responsibility that we have with the United States government, and that's what they need to do, and it's plain and simple, but not to take away things from Indian country.
Kennedy's visit was part of a Southwest tour. Before traveling to the town of Gallup, he met with Navajo Nation officials on the reservation in Window Rock, Arizona. He also met with other tribal leaders in Arizona this week. Members of the Blackfeet Nation have filed a lawsuit against the federal government over recent tariffs imposed on Canadian products. They claim the move impedes tribal sovereignty. Montana Public Radio's Victoria Traxler reports.
Browning Democratic Senator Susan Weber and Blackfeet tribal member Jonathan Sangador filed the suit Friday over tariffs they say impact trade between Canada and the tribe. Former congressional candidate and Missoula-based attorney Monica Trinnell is carrying the case.
Congress has constitutional authority to do tariffs. The executive does not have the authority to impose tariffs in this way, either under the Constitution or under the statutes that were invoked, and it's unconstitutional, illegal, and it needs to stop.
The Blackfoot Confederacy's historical territory overlaps the U.S. and Canadian border. The lawsuit says tribal members are legally exempt from tariffs. Plaintiffs say they damage the Blackfeet Nation's cross-border trade and commerce. Trinnell is asking the court to freeze Canadian tariffs or find other ways to protect tribal members specifically. In Missoula, I'm Victoria Traxler.
New Mexico Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham has signed legislation creating an emergency response to address missing Native Americans in the state, the Turquoise Alert System. The New Mexico Indian Affairs Department said in a statement the alert system marks a significant step in addressing the issue of missing and murdered Indigenous people. According to the New Mexico Department of Justice, there are nearly 200 missing Native Americans across the state. Provisions include establishing a Department of Public Safety coordinated alert system for missing Indigenous persons, trigger alerts when disappearances involve suspicious, dangerous, or involuntary circumstances, and requires coordination with media, law enforcement, and state agencies for rapid notification. New Mexico is among four states to establish an alert system for missing Native people. Vision Maker Media has launched a new YouTube channel for kids, introducing viewers to Native history, language, and ways of life with host Frankie, an animated hawk. Each month will feature a new social studies theme containing a series of short videos curated from the organization's film archives of 50 years. April's theme is Rising Together. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support from AmeriCorps Vista, whose members serve to alleviate poverty while earning money for college and gaining professional skills. Rewarding service opportunities can be found at AmeriCorps.gov/VISTA.
Enbridge strives to be a good steward of the environment, a safe operator of essential energy infrastructure, and a good neighbor. More on Enbridge's Indigenous Reconciliation Action Plan at Enbridge.com. Enbridge proudly supports this program.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
As these changes come through, there is no plan that we are aware of to ensure that things are simpler. Instead, it's more work.
The Trump administration dismantles an office that funds rides and meals for Alaska seniors. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, April 10th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, Kuskokwim River tribes ask federal fisheries managers to limit chum salmon bycatch.
We've really been working to elevate tribal knowledge and tribal voices in this action and in the analysis.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Would you like to play a part in the public media you enjoy? Consider becoming a member or corporate sponsor. Contact your public radio station to learn how.
Start your day with a quick look at the most important stories from around the state with Alaska Morning News, your dose of headlines each weekday morning. With reporters covering every corner of Alaska, you can be sure you're up to date on the stories that matter to Alaskans. Join me, Ava White, for Alaska Morning News, weekdays on your local public radio station.
Chum salmon stocks have been on the decline in recent years. Climate change-induced water warming and acidification has not helped, but neither has bycatch, and soon the federal government might finally do something about it. KNOM's Ben Townsend has more.
The Seward Peninsula Subsistence Regional Advisory Council meets twice a year. On Tuesday, Council Chair Louis Green Jr. brought up one issue long on his mind, chum salmon bycatch. That's salmon inadvertently caught while fishing for other seafoods like halibut or crab.
I started dealing with this stuff at the Board of Fish in 1993, and we said that if you don't start trying to find a way to stop what's happened near the northern Norton Sound.
He's referring to what he described as the first in a series of red flags of collapsing fish runs.
If you don't start trying to find a way to stop what's happened near the northern Norton Sound, you're going to end up with it in Uniplate, you're going to end up with it in the Yukon and the Kuskokwim. God help us if it starts happening in the Bristol Bay.
Decades later, the federal government might finally do something about it. Comments in Green's Advisory Council meetings feed over to the North Pacific Fishery Management Council, which is considering bycatch proposals. That council recommends rules for commercial fishing for many fish species across a giant swath of federally managed Alaska area waters. In February, the Management Council unveiled five proposals it's considering. They include a combination of hard bycatch caps, new regulations, a proposed migratory corridor for Western Alaska chum, and maintaining the status quo. That's unlimited chum salmon bycatch.
There's some inter-industry measures to minimize chum bycatch, but they haven't been super effective in our opinion.
That's Therese Vicente. She's a policy and programs director for the Kuskokwim River Intertribal Fish Commission. The organization represents fish commissioners from all 33 federally recognized tribes along the Kuskokwim.
We've really been working to elevate tribal knowledge and tribal voices in this action and in the analysis so that the North Pacific Council and the National Marine Fisheries Service have the most comprehensive and best available information at their fingertips.
Vicente says the migratory corridor option has been popular amongst tribal representatives.
That's consistently where the most Western Alaska chum are found. So those chum coming back to rivers from Kotzebue up in the north all the way down to Bristol Bay in the south.
The North Pacific Fishery Management Council is expected to release a draft environmental impact statement on its bycatch proposals in August. Members of the public will have 60 days to provide comment. Reporting in Nome, I'm Ben Townsend.
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company will begin preparations next week for inspecting and possibly repairing a small section of the Trans-Alaska Pipeline near downtown Delta Junction. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
Alyeska spokesperson Michelle Egan said Wednesday the project is part of a routine inspection process to ensure the integrity of the pipeline. She said in email responses to questions that workers will excavate soil and other material from a 10-foot section of pipe to allow for a more extensive inspection in May. Egan said company officials want to take a closer look at that stretch of the pipeline where an automated device inside the pipe detected what she called an anomaly during an inspection conducted last year. She said that could indicate that the pipe wall is thinning in that spot. That section of the pipeline was buried in the 1970s. She said if a problem is found, Alyeska officials may decide to apply a steel sleeve around the 48-inch diameter pipe to reinforce it and repair damage. She said that repair would be done later in May and would not require shutting down the pipeline. An Alyeska notice posted to social media says the project will involve large volumes of workers in and around the site, located in the pipeline right-of-way off Nistler Road between the Deltana Fairgrounds and Delta Junction Elementary School. Egan said traffic will be controlled along that stretch of Nistler Road while trucks and other equipment enter and exit the roadway. The project's expected to be completed in June. In Delta, I'm Tim Ellis.
The Trump administration is dismantling a federal office that funds programs for seniors and people with disabilities across Alaska. Organizations that serve those populations in Southeast Alaska specifically say the move is among several recent federal actions calling into question the fate of crucial services such as senior rides and meals. The Alaska Desk's Avery Elfelt has the story.
It's lunchtime on a Wednesday, and there's a steady hum of chatter at the Haynes Clequan Senior Center. On the menu today, lasagna, apricot salad, steamed veggies, and bread, all of which cost just $5 for those who can afford to pay. Haynes resident David Kolstad is sitting at a long table chatting with friends. He says the space is a crucial social outlet.
Three meals a week I don't have to cook.
And it's a good social. I come almost an hour early every day and we sit around and shoot the breeze.
Crystal Verham, who manages the center, said Kolstad isn't alone.
A lot of them say that this is the only thing that they do, their only outlet, their only way to get rides, and for some, it's their only way to get a cooked meal.
The center provides hundreds of meals in Haynes each month. It's operated by Catholic Community Service, a Juneau-based nonprofit that offers lunch, rides, and more for seniors and people with disabilities in Southeast. It's largely grant-funded, including by the Administration for Community Living, or ACL, an office within the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, or at least the office used to be. The Trump administration said late last month it's dismantling the office and integrating its, quote, critical programs elsewhere. The announcement also said thousands of department employees would be cut, including a significant portion of ACL staff. Erin Walker-Tolis is the director of Catholic Community Service. She says the move is among several Trump policies fueling uncertainty.
We're just concerned that about additional cuts and lack of resources from the administration, because community need is only growing as the senior population continues to grow in Southeast.
The Administration for Community Living was created back in 2012 to streamline federal efforts to support seniors and people with disabilities. The office doles out grants to programs that run senior centers, provide rides, and distribute millions of meals. Catholic Community Service, for instance, received roughly $3 million from the office last year, much of which comes through tribal partners. That's nearly 40% of the organization's budget. Walker-Tolis says it remains unclear what the reshuffling will actually mean, and she assumes funding will be administered in another way. But the lack of clarity has its own consequences, she says. That's especially concerning in Southeast, where the population is older than most of the state. Haynes specifically has long held the title of being Alaska's oldest borough.
I'm fine with streamlining and reducing the admin burden and the amount of resources it takes to administer so that more money can go towards people getting helped. But as these changes come through, there is no plan that we are aware of to ensure that things are simpler. Instead, it's more work.
More simply put, Walker-Tolis says,
it is chaos.
The Trump administration's firings and program cuts could affect other vulnerable groups, too. Southeast Alaska Independent Living, for instance, provides a bevy of services, including in Haynes. Among them, supporting students with disabilities as they transition into adulthood, and loaning out walkers, crutches, and wheelchairs. A report from last year says 20% of the organization is federally funded, at least some of which comes from ACL. There's also Reach, Inc., a Juneau-based nonprofit that supports people with disabilities. The group doesn't get funding from ACL, but it does from another federal agency that focuses on Medicaid and Medicare that reportedly lost 300 employees to layoffs. Back at lunch in the senior center, Donald Poling, who is 82 and has lived in Haines with his wife, Dottie, since the 1990s, is eager to chat. He says they heavily rely on the facility's services, including for rides to the ferry and airport when they leave town to seek medical care. When asked what he makes of the recent announcement, Poling makes one thing clear. He's not a fan of Elon Musk, who has been leading White House efforts to downsize the government.
We have a very deep concern about that because it looks like President Musk is kind of taking the government apart. That means public services, services to poor people, services to seniors, even Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid.
As he sees it, it's becoming increasingly clear that the most vulnerable will be hardest hit. In Haines, I'm Avery Elfeld.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, an Anchorage performance of Hadestown hits the city's largest stage.
Feeling like we're so respected in the community just makes me feel like we've really done something amazing.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Public media is designed for and made possible by the communities it serves. Monies generated through estate and deferred gifts enable public radio to provide our listeners, you, with the level of programming excellence you've come to expect. It may also reduce income and estate taxes. Consult your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more. Find out how you can include a gift to your public radio station through estate planning. Ask your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more.
Some Alaska residents are preparing for the likely eruption of Mount Spur, a volcano about 80 miles west of Anchorage. But the potential impacts of that will pale in comparison to the largest volcanic eruption in the 20th century, the 1912 Novarupta Katmai eruption. Ash from that event over a century ago still affects residents on Kodiak Island to this day. KMXT's Davis Hovey has the story.
If Mount Spur erupts, scientists say the amount of ashfall that hits South Central and Kodiak Island communities will depend on several factors. Still, any amount of ash will likely ground flights, darken the sky, and potentially pose health risks to those with respiratory issues. Even if the worst-case scenario occurs, Kodiak residents won't experience anything close to what happened in 1912. More than 100 years ago, a village called Sovanoski sat in what is now Katmai National Park and Preserve, at the foot of Mount Katmai. The village was used traditionally as a subsistence fishing site for salmon. But in 1912, the Novarupta Katmai eruption forced residents out of their village and across Naknek Lake. Teddy Melganek's parents were among them.
Sparks, you could see them, sparks in the air. A lot of ash in the ground. Ground gets so hot, you say you can't even lay down on the ground and you can't go to sleep, it gets warm.
Melganek recounted his experience for University of Alaska Fairbanks oral history program in 1998. He said many elders at the time thought it was the end of the world. In historical accounts the National Park Service collected, witnesses said the ash fallout darkened the sky around Katmai for 3 days. Roughly 100 miles away in Kodiak, ash completely filled the air and plunged the city into darkness, forcing residents to take shelter on the U.S. Revenue cutter Manning. Much of that ash remains in the Valley of 10,000 Smokes to this day, and occasionally gets resuspended in the air by strong northwesterly winds. Hans Schweiger, a research geophysicist with the Alaska Volcano Observatory, says the resuspension is due to an enormous amount of volcanic ash in the area where there is not much vegetation to hold it down in the soil. That's unlike the area around Mount Spur.
That's partly the reason why there's just this almost unlimited source region, but you know, as things age, a lot of the fine material can get sort of blown away. These sort of resuspension events can happen with any sort of primary deposit as well. So like when Spur erupted in 1992, there was remobilization and resuspension of ash in the Anchorage area for a couple weeks afterwards.
But in this case, ash from the 1912 Novarupta Katmai eruption continues to hit the west side of Kodiak Island, roughly 65 miles away. That ash has drifted to Larsen Bay and Karluk at least 4 times in the last month. Although the air quality has not been significantly impacted recently, the resuspended ash affects local aircraft that regularly fly passengers from Kodiak to Larsen Bay, Karluk, and other communities around the archipelago. Eric Howard directs operations at Island Air. He says their two flights to Larsen Bay were canceled on Monday, April 7th, due to resuspended ash.
The big thing for us is when you do get those strong westerly winds, typically the ash will be worse on the west side of the island. So when we're operating to some of the float stops over there, and then the villages of Larsen Bay and Karluk are usually the ones that get affected by it the most, though I have seen it where it can come all the way up here towards town and affect all flights.
He says it seems like ash is blowing to the island more often this spring due to the lack of a winter snowpack. Schweiger, the geophysicist, agrees. He says there does not seem to be an end in sight for this volcanic phenomenon.
I think there's probably enough there so that it's going to continue to blow around for the rest of my lifetime.
But Schweiger adds that it will depend on how much revegetation can occur in that area containing all the ash in the coming years. Alaska Volcano Observatory and the National Weather Service will continue to monitor resuspended ash from the 1912 Novarupta Katmai eruption and issue advisories in the interest of public health, such as air quality advisories or warnings for local aviators when warranted. For the latest information about this or Mount Spur, go online to the Alaska Volcano Observatory website. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Davis Havi.
Scientists at Alaska's flagship research university staged a demonstration Tuesday to protest threats to research funding, federal government reorganization, and the freezing of science grants. Two dozen researchers gathered on the plaza in front of the Margaret Meary Building at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. KUAC's Robin reports.
With more than $200 million in research activity last year, the University of Alaska Fairbanks is Alaska's research epicenter. Alicia Torek is afraid that her work as a climate scholar through the UAF Undergraduate Honors Program will be cut off.
We do hands-on research. This is only offered through the Climate Scholars. This is a huge opportunity, but unfortunately, a lot of this is coming to an end because the funding is being cut. So these opportunities for students to leave here and be able to step into jobs that benefit everybody is no longer existing.
Tuesday's Kill the Cuts protest reflected others across the country concerned about federal research, health care, and education funding. It was publicized and supported by a coalition of labor and education organizations. Among other cuts in research funding, the National Institutes of Health last month began to pull back money it had already approved for research, including projects focused on diversity, equity, and inclusion, LGBTQ+ health, and vaccine hesitancy, on the basis that those projects no longer align with American priorities as defined by the Trump administration. There are currently 37 NIH-funded projects in Alaska. Neurobiologist Abel Bolt Ito says that's why they chose to demonstrate in front of the flagship science building, named after Margaret Meary, the grandmother of the conservation movement and the first woman to graduate from what's now the University of Alaska Fairbanks.
The focus is on biomedical research because that is so important for, healing people. I just read an article just last week that the first person was cured of sickle cell anemia with the gene editing tools that they now have. I mean, that would not have been possible without National Institutes of Health funding.
With an annual budget of roughly $47 billion, the NIH dwarfs the rest of the world's funders of biomedical research. And cutting that funding is impacting medical research in Alaska. According to the Blue Ridge Institute for Medical Research that tracks this funding, UAF gets about $6.25 million from NIH. The Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium in Anchorage gets a little under $5 million. The Sitka Tribe of Alaska gets $500,000. And the University of Alaska Anchorage, about $400,000. Effects of these research cuts are rippling nationally and internationally, and Alaska scholars say they're feeling it. Kaz Nicely works for the Geophysical Institute.
I had a DEI-related proposal that had been funded, and then the funding terminated because of the executive order. But it was one project, and there are so many other people that are affected so much worse than me.
Ingrid Johnson researches in the UAF Justice Department. She has published research on violence against women in Alaska.
So this spring I was going to apply for OVW funding. That's the Office of Violence Against Women, but they froze their funding in February, the beginning of February, and it's still frozen.
She says Alaska, with its highest rates of violence against women in the country, needs to keep working on the solutions.
So this is important not only for violence against women research, but it's also important for all research on crime and justice. And so essentially right now there is no new funding for those topics.
The university has calculated that every dollar in UA research generates $8 in the state economy. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
IBEW's path to success includes excellent training, good wages, benefits, and a comfortable retirement. Join the IBEW and build a bright future. Call 907-575-7285 to find out more. This message sponsored by IBEW Local 1547.
If domestic violence has touched your life, know that you are not alone. You have the power to break free and build a future filled with love and respect. There's hope and help waiting for you. For free and confidential support, visit notaloneak.org to speak to someone who's trained to help. Every Alaskan deserves to feel safe. This message sponsored by the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
It's a double-wide trailer off the Birchwood exit on the outskirts of Anchorage, not exactly a Las Vegas-style casino. But since the Aklutna tribe's new gaming hall opened in January, there are often long lines of people waiting to get in. That could change if the state is successful in its bid to shut down the gambling operation. On Wednesday, the Alaska Attorney General asked a federal court in Washington, D.C. to issue a preliminary injunction against it. This follows a lawsuit the state filed in February after the Interior Department approved the project in the final days of the Biden administration. The Chinan Gaming Hall sits on a native allotment near the Birchwood Airport. The Interior Department under Biden said the Aklutna tribe has sovereignty over the land, just as tribes in the lower 48 have over Indian reservations where gambling is allowed. But the state is fighting that decision based on previous court cases that gave the state jurisdiction over native allotments. Aaron Leggett, the president of the Aklutna tribe, called this latest court filing disheartening, a sign that Governor Mike Dunleavy is escalating his attack on tribal sovereignty. In a statement, Leggett touted the success of this casino and its potential to bring jobs and economic opportunity to the region. The gaming hall is in a temporary building with fewer than 100 electronic bingo games. The tribe plans to expand to a larger facility with more machines and restaurants. Great theater can energize an entire community. That's what happened in Anchorage earlier this year with a high school production of the hit musical Hadestown. Enthusiasm spread around the city, word of mouth, leading to packed shows, an extended run, and then an invitation to perform one night only on the city's biggest stage. But as Alaska Public Media's Hannah Floor reports, school budget cuts mean this may be the group's last run.
A few dozen kids are scattered among a tangle of music stands in West High's band room. Some close their eyes and sway, snapping their fingers.
Something's funky with your part. Sorry,
it's the last rehearsal before the cast of Hadestown Teen Edition take the stage at the Atwood Concert Hall in the Performing Arts Center. The musical retells the Greek myth of Eurydice and Orpheus. The story follows the doomed lovers down into an underworld controlled by the god of the dead, Hades.
They get to hell or to Hades town. Ain't no difference anymore.
Brian Leick teaches English and theater at West High and directed the play. He says he had an inkling this production was something special during their first performance.
As the curtain raised at the end of the show, the audience leapt to their feet. Standing ovation on an opening night is kind of rare, but we got that, and the wheels started turning in my head. Something's going to happen here.
Oh! That first performance drew about 150 people. But a couple days later, the number had more than doubled. The production got an extended run. And at the final school performance, a couple weeks later, more than 1,200 people filled the high school auditorium.
We had so many instances of people showing up Thursday night, coming back Friday night, coming to the Saturday matinee, and then, oh, hey, familiar face, are you here for this Saturday evening performance too?
That level of enthusiasm really energized the cast. Junior Azra Brand plays Hermes, the narrator. She says the crowds were always loud, but some nights they went wild for every little moment.
It was really fun as, like, our community to be like, yeah, we are appreciated and we're so big in Anchorage. I still, like, pinch myself every once in a while.
Cody Costello was at one of those early performances. She's the president of the Performing Arts Center and in charge of bringing Broadway shows to Anchorage. Hadestown is her favorite musical, so there was no way she was going to miss it. But could these high school kids pull off such a complex production? She says she had her answer in the first 5 minutes.
There's a certain type of quiet that will happen with an audience because they're so engaged. They're like on the edge of their seats. They're totally connected.
At intermission, she couldn't contain herself. She tracked down Like and invited him to bring the show to the Performing Arts Center. It's not a stage anyone expected to be on. Adela Judge is a senior who plays Eurydice. She says the whole experience has felt surreal.
Feeling like we're so respected in the community just makes me feel like we've really done something amazing. Like, we're unstoppable.
But then, at the end of March, bad news. The Anchorage School District notified hundreds of teachers that they would lose their positions due to a massive budget deficit. Like was among them. He'll be transferred to another school. And because he's the only theater teacher at West High, that means an end to the current theater program. Judge says she and a lot of her castmates started crying when they heard the news. She says theater at West High feels like home, a safe place to be herself.
I can't even imagine what it'd be like without having the arts and having theater be such a supportive, like, stake in the ground for me, like keeping my tent from falling over.
School districts around the state have been urging lawmakers to increase per-student education funding. Last week, West High students started making those calls too. Brian Like says his kids deserve better.
I really think we've left a fingerprint on this town that people are going to be talking about for a long time. Wish it didn't have to end like this.
But he says the storyline of Hadestown gives him some comfort.
Even though it turns out exactly the same way every night, he always loses the girl. We're going to sing it anyway. Because what else can we do in the face of all this darkness but hope?
She's going to ride that train.
Ride that train.
She's going to ride that train.
Ride that train.
She's going to ride that train to the end of the line.
And he says they're still going to tell one hell of a story when they take the stage on Saturday. In Anchorage, I'm Hannah Floor.
All aboard! A one, a two, a one, two, three, four.
Way down, Hadestown, way down under the ground.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Ben Townsend in Nome, Tim Ellis in Delta Junction, Avery Elfelt in Haines, Davis Heavy in Kodiak, Robin in Fairbanks, and Rhonda McBride and Hannah Floor in Anchorage. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. And if you missed any of tonight's show, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde, Tim Rocky's our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. One of the greatest honors for a public media station is delivering on its promise to provide quality programming and news you can trust to the communities it serves. What you hear on air is the result of a dedicated team working together to bring you the best. It's a privilege to be a part of your day. Thank you for listening, for your feedback, and for your support. Public media is about you, the community we serve. Thank you for tuning in. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.
Guess what I did today? Those were the words I said to you. It was last May, don't know the exact day. In my head there was a ring. Then you told me that you love me more than anything in your life. So I asked you, would you do me the honor of being my wife? I will be your man, your protector, your best friend, till my humble life is ended and time begins again. Just faces. Some people grew apart, but you stayed right in my heart. Yeah, and so many times, picture this day inside my mind. And for so many years, ooh, I knew it would be you here with me. Take you for my wife, the center of my life, and I will never ever fade from this choice I made. Yeah.
Tell me, 'cause you've been acting kinda strange lately, but I already know what's been going on. A girl, I miss a love this a girl. No problem is a girl, I miss a love this a girl. Don't you know that I'm a stone, I miss a give a diamond and pearl. Give a this a girl, I miss a diamond and pearl. No problem in me on this, I don't do believe. You say that I'm a snow, you're mad, they're cool and deadly. But my love this a girl, but she left me lonely. No problem is a girl, and she left me lonely. She won't go great for me, and put a bye bye bye. She won't go great for me, and put a bye bye bye. Me, I go find another lover, miss a find another one. Find another lover, miss a find another one to make me feel fine, make me feel fine. Put a bam 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 bam, me young girl, make me feel fine.
Girl, I've been hurt, now I need another lover.
With you, but this ain't the honeymoon. Past the infatuation phase, right in the thick of love. At times we get sick of love. It seems like we argue every day. I know I misbehaved, and you've made your mistakes, and we both still got room left to grow. And though love sometimes hurts, I still put you first, and we'll make this thing work. But I think we should take it slow. We're just ordinary people. We don't know which way to go, 'cause we're ordinary people. Maybe we should take it slow. Take it slow, oh, oh. This time we'll take it slow. Take it slow, oh, oh. This time we'll take it slow. This ain't a movie, no. No fairy tale conclusion, y'all. It gets more confusing every day. Sometimes it's heaven sent, then we head back to hell again. We kiss, then we make up on the way. I hang up, you call. We rise and we fall, and we feel like just walking away. As our love advances, we take second chances. Though it's not a fantasy, I still want you to stay. We're just ordinary people. We don't know which way to go, 'cause we're ordinary people. Maybe we should take it slow. Time will take.
ordinary people. Maybe we should take it slow. Hey, we're just ordinary people. We don't know which way to go. 'Cause we're ordinary people. Maybe we should take it slow. Take it slow. This time we'll take it slow, take it slow. Oh, this time we'll take it slow, take it slow, slow. This time we'll take it slow, take it slow. Oh, 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 this time we'll take it slow.
You take your car to work, I'll take my board and Child, I'm seeing everything in a different light. The whole world looks so much bigger, every shade from black to white. But we change as we grow older, and our light begins to fade. It's time that we started looking, start looking for a better way. Hey, give me love with no strings. Give me wisdom, give me wings and fly above. Give me love, give me love. Give me peace to set me free. Give me love the world can see. Give me love, love, love. Give me love. See a child without another. See a man without a bed. She hides her eyes behind sunglasses, and she believes the things he said. Can you see what it is we're doing? Can you see what we haven't done? Can we learn to live together? Can we learn to be as one? Give me love with no strings. Give me wisdom. Give me wings and fly above. Give me love. The bigger picture, and we're hoping someone else will care. There's a call.